So we're going to learn tonight in Yirtzeh Hashem, Maimar Zayin, the seventh Maimar in Pachad Yitzchak for Rosh Hashanah. And hopefully this will give us a good introduction to Rosh Hashanah. The focus of this Maimar is a very famous pasuk in Tehillim. Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Trua. And this pasuk praises and describes the special nature of the Jewish nation because they Yodei Trua. They know the Trua of the shofar. And the end of the pasuk says, Hashem bi'or panecha yahalechlin. And there's something in this pasuk that emphasizes the Ar Panim. The Ar Panim, so to speak, the Meir Panim, the Haris Panim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is showing us something very, very special. And the question that the Maimer raises is the following. Haris Panim, whatever that concept means, and hopefully we'll get more of a grasp on it as we get into things, is not uniquely related to the mitzvah of shofar. In fact, it relates to all the mitzvahs. We say in the Nusach of Atfilah, in Shmon Esrei, three times a day, we say, Ki bi'or panecha nasata lanu Toras Chaim. The phrase Toras Chaim refers to all the mitzvahs of the Torah, not just to shofar. And yet, the Pasuk in Tehillim singles out shofar for Haris Panim. So it means that although shofar, insofar as it's part of all the mitzvahs, the matrix of 613, it has Haris Panim to it, but in addition, there's a special element of Haris Panim which is uniquely and singularly related to the mitzvah of shofar. And the question is why? What is this inyan of Haris Panim that's unique to the mitzvah of shofar? Hashem bi'or panecha yahalechu. And furthermore, the Ha'aris Panim of shofar is not related to the listening of the shofar, but rather to the Yediyas HaTrua, Ashrayom Yodei Trua. What is the Yodei Trua? And why is it that because this nation is Yodei Trua, therefore they have the Ha'aris Panim? So we're asking two questions, just to summarize. Number one, what is unique about shofar? And in addition to the Aris Panim that applies to every single mitzvah, shofar has its own unique Aris Panim. And number two, why is the Aris Panim of shofar related specifically to the Yodei Trua? And now, let's quote the Medrash in Yalkut on Tehillim, on this very same pasuk. Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Trua, the Medrash comments, Yodim Lefatos Es Boram B'Trua. Let's just spend a minute just translating the words of the Medrash. This is quite a wild Medrash, make your hair stand on end. The Medrash says that the Pasuk is praising Klal Yisrael because they know the secret of how to seduce the Creator. The Trua itself is a Pitui. And Yediyas HaTrua therefore means that we have a unique ability that's special in the midst of shofar, that we're able to be mefata kaviyachol the Ribono Shel Olam, the Bore. We don't know in any other mitzvah that the mitzvah has inherent within it the power, the ability to be mefata the Bore. And what is this all about? So we summarize three questions now, all that touch on the unique nature of the mitzvah of shofar. Number one, the mitzvah of shofar is the mitzvah that's singled out for Ha'aris Panim, a special, unique Ha'aris Panim of shofar. Number two, we understand that the Ha'aris Panim of shofar is related to the Yodei Trua, not to the Shmias Kol Shofar, but to the Yodei Trua. Number three, we know that Yodei Trua means that we are able to be Mefateh which literally means to seduce the borei, the creator of the world. Now, what's the idea satrua? What is the power inherent in this mitzvah shofar that we didn't find in any other mitzvah to be mafata the borei? Now, let's put these questions on the side, and we're going to pick up another topic, so to speak, within Rosh Hashanah, and then hopefully swing back at the very end to this Yodei Trua concept. The Pasuk says in Nach, Nechemia Perkches, relating to the what we call the Aliyah Shnia, the second commonwealth, when the people came back and returned from the diaspora, the Golos of Bavel, Nechemia turns to the people on Rosh Hashanah. It's the first Rosh Hashanah of this ingathering of the exiles. And he says to them, Al tis ablu vi al tivku. You should not grieve. You should not cry. Vi al te otzvu. And you should not be sad. Why? Ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem. Because this Yontif, this day of Rosh Hashanah, is a day of Chedva. It's a day of Simcha. And that is your Ma'oz, meaning that's your power. Now it's very interesting. Sometimes when I tell you not to cry, what I mean to say is that crying and grieving is totally, totally out of place. It's inappropriate, because it's a day of Simcha. On a day of Simcha, like Yontif, we don't cry, and certainly we don't grieve. That's one way of learning the Pasuk in Nehemiah. But if you listen carefully to the language of Nehemiah, you'll discern that he's not telling you don't cry because it's a day of Simcha and it's absolutely negative, it's absolutely meaningless to cry on this day. He's really saying something different. He's saying that there's a barrier here, there's a blockage that prevents us from crying. Even though crying itself, Bechiah, would be appropriate for Rosh Hashanah. There's something about Rosh Hashanah which is unique, and the concept of Bechiah is not foreign to Rosh Hashanah. Maybe because of the Pachad Adin, because we're afraid of judgment, but whatever it might be, there is room for arguing for Bechiah. But there's a misnagi to Bechiah. There's a power that is contra Bechiah, the antinomy to Bechiah. And that is a dechiyah. Dechiyah means we have to put bechiyah on the back burners. And we have to be machriya in this contention, in this seesaw confrontation in favor of dropping bechiyah. Why? Because chedvas Hashem hi ma'ozchem. So again, when Nehemiah tells the people al tivku, he's not telling us that bechiyah is totally inappropriate. He's saying that despite the fact that bechiyah is appropriate, and there's something inherent in the nature of Rosh Hashanah which would lead to Bechiah, nevertheless, we have to be Docha Bechiah. Docha, it's sort of like you have two mitzvahs that vie for your attention at the same time. Right? On the one hand, you have Kibbut Av, and on the other hand, you have Kibbut Ein. So we have a law of Dechiah, meaning first tend to your father's needs and then to your mother's needs. But it's not that Dechiah means that the Kibbut Ein is completely uprooted and completely nulled and voided. No, it has to take a back seat. It's on the back burners. But it is appropriate. Here too, Bechiah is appropriate for Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a day of crying. However, since Chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem, Nehemiah says, we're going to have to be docha the Bechiah. Put it on the back burners. Hold off on the Bechiah, because this is a day of Chedva. There's a certain happiness and joy that we have in this day. But the entire tension here in the Pasuk is real. It's genuine. Both Bechiah and Chedvas Hashem are both appropriate forms or reflections of the experience of the sanctity of Rosh Hashanah. At the end of the day, the Machriya, the one that wins out, is going to be the Chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem. But Bechiah is not something totally foreign or alien to the nature and the experience of Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, the poskim say, and this you'll see in Aruch Chaim, Siman Tov Kuf Tzadi Zayin, that if a person cries on Rosh Hashanah, Or, for example, if a person decides to fast on Rosh Hashanah, with Tainus is a kind of a bechia, then that's not prohibited. You are allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Now, I'm not saying that I would advocate that one fast on Rosh Hashanah, but there are Jews that do fast on Rosh Hashanah. And yesh al melisma. You don't find in any yontif, any posek in the world who will advocate the possibility of fasting on a yontif. Why? Because fasting is totally meaningless. What?
I know people that do tainus dibur.
He says, afilu lahashita, even according to the other opinion quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, namely that we don't fast on Rosh Hashanah, but even that is kind of limited, because even if you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah because it's called a chag, b'kesli yom chagenu is a pasuk. Nevertheless, despite the pasuk until b'kesli yom chagenu, Rosh Hashanah is different than other festivals. On other festivals, you're not allowed to fast until midday, until Chatzos, and Rosh Hashanah we're not makvid. If a person wants to fast until Chatzos or Rosh Hashanah, is tovel of bracha, let him be blessed. And even more so, let's say a person had a bad dream. So normally the halacha is that if on a chag you want to fast a what's called a tainus chalom, you're allowed to do so, but you're in a sense violating the sanctity of Yontif, the day of Simcha, and therefore you're going to have to make up another day that's called a tainus lahashlim, and you're going to have to fast 2 days. One day the tainus chalom on Yontif, and another day to fast for the avera of fasting. But in the case of Rosh Hashanah, there's no requirement. And again, in the same Siman Tov Kuf Tzadi Zayi, the Mishnah Berurah explains that not only is it permissible to fast a half a day on Rosh Hashanah, but if a person had a bad dream and he wants to fast the entire day, he doesn't have to make up the day of Rosh Hashanah by fasting a second day because he fasted on Rosh Hashanah.
Well, isn't Rosh Hashanah different than all the other chagim? Because this one is like, it's two by default, because it's always like not sure, quasi, which one is the correct day.
Okay, but all these dinim would apply even back in the day when there was only one Rosh Hashanah, one day Rosh Hashanah.
Is it right that it also the impact of Rosh Hashanah on Aveilut is also weaker than...
Correct, and the Rambam says we don't say how on Rosh Hashanah. All these are expressions of the fact that Avelus and Bechiyah are not foreign to Rosh Hashanah. There's something inherent in the day. It's a day of fear. We're overwhelmed by the judgment. We'll see how he develops this idea. But Bechiyah is not completely nekar. Nekar means it's not completely uprooted. There is a vestige. There's certainly like a skeleton in the closet here in the shadows. It lurks in the shadows of Bechiyah. And yet, at the end of the day, Chedves Hashem Hu Hima Ozchem says Nechemia, and therefore we're going to have to be Besimcha. But nevertheless, the blockage of Bechia is not to uproot Bechia, which in the case of another Yontif, another Chag, it would be even superfluous. There would be no necessity to even tell you that. No Bechiyah, Bechiyah is antithetical to the Chag, but in the case of Rosh Hashanah, the fact that Nechemiah has to go out of his way to tell us, let's not cry, let's be happy, it means that crying would be an appropriate behavior, and we saw different expressions of this in Halacha. So if you look at the bottom of your page, he says the following, Menias Bechiyah, the absence of Bechiyah, and the inhibition against crying with regard to all the festivals, is b'torah shlilas inyan ha-b'chiyah kol ikar. Means we completely negate and undermine the concept of b'chiyah. B'chiyah is totally out of place. Because b'chiyah, he says, is antithetical, and here we're turning to the other page, to the very nature of the day in the mitzvah sayom as a day of simcha. However, from Nechemiah, it seems that what Nechemiah is saying is that afalpi, even though it's a day of b'chiyah, Bechiyah is appropriate in Rosh Hashanah. Inherent in the nature of the day of Rosh Hashanah, there is Bechiyah, there is crying and sad, and a certain nervous tension. Nevertheless, al tivku, don't cry, v'al tiatzvu, and don't be sad, I'd like you to be happy. So it's fascinating that Rosh Hashanah is a day which has a certain tension to it, in the very nature of the day. On the one hand, it's a day of Bechiyah in potential, but in actuality, it's a day of Chedvas Hashem Al Tivku V'Al Teyotzvu. Okay. Do you have page Samaches, or did I make a mistake? So I see you floating around.
Yeah.
You have it. Good. Okay. It should have come out on the flip side of the page that we did until now, some of Zion, but
we'll work that way.
Yeah? Okay. Okay. Now, in order to appreciate this tension within Rosh Hashanah, we're going to start with a whole new topic. But it's not really a new topic, it's related. And that is the Rambam in Hilchus Tshuva. Now, the Rambam in Hilchus Tshuva is divided up into two halves. The first half goes through the laws of Tshuva in great detail. And then, from the fifth perek and on, there's a certain crossroads, a certain change, what we call in Hebrew a mifneh. It's a parshas drocha. And the Rambam in Perek Hay is dedicated to the concept of freedom of choice. As you know, I don't have to tell you, freedom of choice is a concept that has confused the minds of the great philosophers, both Jewish and non-Jewish, throughout the generations. Freedom of choice is a very elusive and very profound kind of concept for many different reasons. In any event, what we want to focus on in the Rambam, and the Rambam says the following, we could just go through the Rambam word for word. He says, Rishus l'chol adam nesuna, man is given permission if he wants to set himself and his goals towards derech tov, the good way. He wants to be a tzaddik, God gives him the ability to do so. If on the other hand, he wants to turn away from the good path and he wants to be, chas v'shalom, an evildoer, he has the permission to do so. And the Rambam summarizes this whole discussion by saying that this is not only an ikar gadol, this is not only something that is fundamental, but moreover, hu omud ha-Torah v'mitzvah, is the pillar on which, the foundation on which all of Torah and mitzvahs stand. Meaning if you remove the concept of freedom of choice, all of Torah and mitzvahs falls apart. And the pasuk that the Rambam quotes is Re'ei nosati lufanecha hayom es hachayim ves hamoves es hatov ves hara. God says to man, and this we'll find towards the end of Sefer Dvarim, that you have two choices in front of you. You have death and life. You have evil, you have good. Make the right decision of bachar to bachayim. In any event, the Rambam chooses to formulate this concept of freedom of choice as the ikar agadol, as the primary fundamental principle on which the entire Torah and mitzvah stand, based on the pasuk Nasati lufanecha sachayim v'samoves. And the Rambam's intention is quite clear. Through the power of freedom of choice, which relates to the entire corpus of the Torah, that's called klolius in the Torah, is dafka mishum kach boak because of loshen chayim. That's why it's called Chaim. Chaim, life, is a general concept that applies to all of the Torah. The entire Torah and all the different challenges that we face with regard to Tariq mitzvahs encompasses the concept of Chaim. Chaim is the choice of Bacharta B'Chaim to make the right decision with regard to all the mitzvahs in the Torah. However, when we talk about making choice decisions and serving Hashem in the proper way, we really have to mention that there are two fundamental ways in which we serve Hashem. He calls them Shroshim li'avodas Hashem. These are the roots, the sources for avodas Hashem. Two basic midos or modes of worship. One is called Ava and the other is called Yira. Now, when it comes to freedom of choice, Chachomim, Chazal, pinpoint Yira, not Ava. And they say, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz mi Yira shamayim. This is a famous Gemara in Brachas Lamed Gimel. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for Yira shamayim. Yira shamayim is given to man's freedom of choice. So then when we talk about this fundamental principle of freedom of choice, in the language of Chazal, instead of choosing Ava, the emphasis here is on Yira, the fear of heaven. Now, we're not talking about Yerushalayim as a specific mitzvah. It's true that amongst the 613 mitzvahs that we enumerate, one is called Yerushalayim. There's no reason to separate Yerushalayim from the other Tariq mitzvahs and say this is the Koach HaBechira. This is singled out as the Koach HaBechira. When Chazal say Hakol Bidei Shamayim Chutz MiYerushalayim, that man's power of freedom of choice is specifically the area of Yerushalayim, that means Yerushalayim with regard to the Avodah, that need of Yerushalayim, the mode that relates to all the mitzvahs. Every single mitzvah it presents in a sense a challenge. Man is at a crossroads. He has to decide whether to implement the mitzvah or chas v'shalom not to. He's got to use his freedom of choice in the right way. And he does so out of a sense of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is something that defines his nefesh. And it plays the role as being the source and the root for all of man's service to Hashem. Man, through this nefesh of Yerushalayim, he's afraid of heaven. He comes to serve Hashem. But yet, since there are two modes of serving Hashem, one is called Yira, the other is called Ava, why do we find, with regard to the power of man, to freedom of choice, a direct, distinct relationship to Yira Shamayim? Why does it say HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mi Yira Shamayim? It doesn't say HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mi Avas Shamayim or Avas Hashem.
Do the Chachamim assume that Avas Shamayim comes as a given, and that's why they don't list it?
It's hard for me to accept that it's a given, because I would think that Yiras Hashem is much more natural. It's not, you know, Avas Hashem is not a given. Avas Hashem is a much higher level. I don't know how many people, you know, there are tzaddikim, of course, who reach that high level of Avas Hashem, but most of us, and certainly in our youth, when we're still underdeveloped in our spiritual avoda, we function out of Yiras Shamayim. You know, we're afraid of the repercussions of sin. You know, if we step out of line, like a parent will discipline a child, we'll get patch. Here too, with regard to our avodah, dedication to Hashem, we have to be very careful not to overstep our bounds. If we violate the will of Hashem, we will get punished for that. So any encounter with chait should and temptation of sin should automatically engender a sense of fear. That's natural. That's the meat of Yerushalayim. And out of that sense of fear, we should overcome all the challenges, all the temptations to do evil. We're afraid of the repercussions of evil, of chait, and therefore, mitoch Yerushalayim, we serve Hashem. And the Maimer here, in this Pachad Yitzchak Maimer Zayin for Rosh Hashanah, wants to focus on this concept of Yerushalayim and its relationship to freedom of choice. And here we move on to number Hey. He says the following. There's something fundamentally different and unique about Yira. And Yira is different than Ava in a very fundamental way. He says the following. There's a ratzon, there's a will of man that's related to Ava, and there's a will of man that's related to Yira. When a person moves or is pulled towards Ava, and he has the ratzon to do Ava, it's very straightforward. He has a ratzon of Ava Hashem, give him the opportunity to fulfill his desire of Ava, to express and reflect his Ava, and he does so. And that's the end of the story. It's a one-way street. You move up the ladder, you move up the road, and you arrive at your destination. You have a ratzon of Ava, and therefore you achieve Ava. However, with regard to Yira, it's much more complicated. When a person feels a constant sense of Yira, of Pachad, what does it mean? Let's take a mashal. Let's say you are walking in a very dark place, and it could be dangerous. There might be wild beasts there, might be attackers, you may fall into a ditch. So because of that danger that threatens to ambush him at any moment, he will never be satisfied until he removes the sakana, he removes the danger. all these different dangers that lurk in the shadows and engender fear, if he has a will to overcome this fear and to neutralize it, he's got to just completely destroy and remove all the sources of fear, all these dangerous obstacles in his way. And therefore, he says the following. Lo tehei, this is at the bottom of page Samaches. Lo tehei koras ruach shleimah, who will never be completely satisfied unless he's given the opportunity to save himself, to protect himself from danger, and to be oker, completely undermine any sort of danger. Yesh lo beratzon shel pachad, chatira tzuma. Chatira tzuma means he's motivated to push forward. La'akira sasakona me'ikar, to completely remove the danger from its very roots. Because otherwise, if the danger is still there, okay, he may succeed at one point in arriving at his destination, and he was spared from the sakona, but he still has to have fear, because on the next part of his trip, the next leg of his journey, he may suffer from defeat, from those very dangers that lurk in the shadows. So his goal and his ratzon is to defeat all these dangers and completely remove them.
So he's saying that you're as a chal all the time, like on the person, and that Ava kind of has
He's saying the following. Ava is what he calls simple and straightforward. It's not complex. Why? Because there's no antithesis in Ava, meaning Ava simply means I want to do the good for Hashem, I want to bring Nachas Ruach to Hashem, I love Hashem, I'm totally dedicated. The path is very clear. In the case of Yir, it's much more complicated. Let's spend a few minutes, and then we'll come back to Ava, to understand and appreciate the complexity inherent in Yiras Hashem. Why is Yiras so complicated? He says the following. Because if his goal in Yira is to remove all the dangers, so when we come to freedom of choice, what are the dangers that present themselves to the Oved Hashem with regard to his decision-making process? What are those dangers called? When man is given freedom of choice to choose either A or B, A means good, you know, remove those dangers, and B is what?
Not good.
Give me another word for not good. Again, you're talking about religious Avodas Hashem. There's 613 mitzvahs. There's mitzvahs and there's what? What's the flip side of a mitzvah?
Averus
or chatoy. Now the Yerushalayim realizes that if Chas V'Shalom falls prey to the Eitzahara and he violates one of the averus, that chait is going to incur tremendous punishments for him, right? He wants to avoid those punishments. So every chait really presents a very great danger, like in the mashal that we said of a person walking through the road at night, and he could fall into a pit, and God knows what will happen to him. And if he's driving a car at night, it's even more dangerous. If he goes off a cliff, he's a goner. I mean, it's terrible. So obviously he wants to remove all these pitfalls. In the Nimshal, when the Oved Meira wants to remove all these pitfalls, because he's afraid of the repercussions of falling into one of these pitfalls, right, in one of these pits, he wants to remove all what? Well, there is all encounter, all temptation of sin. That's not good either. Here's where Yerushalayim becomes so complex. Because what happens the moment he removes chait?
So there's no freedom of choice?
Exactly. There's no freedom of choice. So there's a paradox. On the one hand, Yira, as the motive, the primary motive of freedom of choice, means you've encountered chait, overcome chait, it's a very dangerous situation lurking in the shadows, remove it, completely obliterate it and uproot it from its source. On the other hand, the very moment he removes chait, he's left in a situation where he's no longer bechira chafshus, he no longer has freedom of choice.
Because he now has clarity, basically?
Yeah, because chait no longer exists, right? If you have a road, and on that road you have three pitfalls. You have ditches. You have animals that might attack. You have men that might, human beings that might attack. If you remove A, B, and C, then the road is perfectly safe. If the Yirei Shamayim, out of his sense of pachad, will remove all chet, and he no longer encounters chet, he no longer is tempted by chet, then paradoxically, he's removed from himself the Bechira Chofshis. So on the one hand, he started with Bechira Chofshis, and that's where he utilized his koach, his midah of Yirei Shamayim. But at the end of the day, by implementing his Yirei Shamayim, he removed from himself the very koach ha-bechira. Because bechira itself is built on the fact that you have chet, you have evil, tov, ra, both are vying for your attention. Now the chet is gone. You've completely removed it.
Why wasn't him choosing to remove the chet his bechira koshu?
Correct, but as a result, you know, we give him a round of applause. You know, it's Rocky, you know, he won the boxing match. But then he's no longer in the ring anymore because he's completely destroyed his foe, his enemy. There's no longer Bechira Chofshis. It's a very kind of strange thing. The greatest gift that God endowed man with is his Koach HaBechira. You don't want to forfeit that Koach HaBechira. You want to have the Koach HaBechira. You want to have the temptation and the freedom of choice. And you want to succeed. But once you succeed, paradoxically, you've removed from yourself freedom of choice. In Ava, there's no complexity. Ava continues to be a love experience. But Yiro, which means I'm afraid of the repercussions of chet, means that I'm tempted to sin, but because of my overwhelming fear of the repercussions of sin, the punishment, etc., I want to completely remove the chet. Like anyone who's in a state of pachad wants to completely obliterate all those factors that might trip him up. At the end of the day, once he completely obliterates and undermines the chet, he uproots it from its source, he's left without freedom of choice. That's what he says on the second line, if you want to underline this. Hu yotzer, this very power of freedom of choice, creates a stira, a contradiction, beguf hamahalach shel avoda, in the very way of avodas Hashem. Because the rutz on the will of this attribute called yira is to be oker, is completely undermine any possibility of danger. And therefore, inherent in yiras hachet is the desire, the striving to completely destroy the entity, the reality of sin. That's what he wants to do. Because sin engenders this fear, it's such a dangerous kind of situation. Get rid of that danger. So I want to completely undermine the metzius of chet. No, but what happens when he completely destroys chet? If chet no longer exists, then memela, ipso facto, he has completely destroyed the power of bechira. So since he destroys the power of bechira, at that very moment when there's no longer a bechira, there's no longer avoda. Because what is avoda? Avoda means that a man is challenged, he's at a crossroad, he has chet, and he has to deter. He has to overcome the chet. But if the avoda of yiras hachet itself brings to the point in which he destroys chet, because that's the sakana that he wants to get rid of, then paradoxically, he's involved in a self-contradiction. His desire is to be an Eved Hashem. All he wants out of life is to serve Hashem. But to serve Hashem means that you have to have an encounter with chet, a freedom of choice, and implementing it in the right way. You choose, you make the right decisions. And you face chet, and you defeat chet. And when I say defeat chet, I mean to completely undermine chet. If that's his will, to undermine chet, then at the same time, his will is to completely undermine the existence of Bechira. Because Bechira is only meaningful if there's a Metzius of Chet. But he doesn't want the Metzius of Chet. He wants to be Mavata L'Chet, because that's the danger that he wants to get rid of. He says, Hatshuka shel yiras hachet, shel efesi l'siluk Metziuso shel Chet. The great craving and desire of someone who has fear of God is to remove Chet. But if he removes Chet, then he no longer has avoda. He's completely undermined his avoda. Now again, you could always say that, all right, so he won't have this temptation because he's completely destroyed the chait X, but he'll have a different chait and a different temptation. But that's not his subject matter. He's not talking about this chait or that chait, this temptation or that temptation. He's talking about the concept of being an Oved Hashem. To be an Oved Hashem means to destroy chait. But if you're an Oved Hashem out of year and you destroy chait, then paradoxically, you're no longer an Oved Hashem. You've completely removed the rug from under the ground that you stand on and given you and grant you a status of an Oved Hashem. You're not an Oved Hashem.
Is this paradox unique to the Prophet Yisrael?
Let me reformulate your question. Are there any earlier sources before the Machad Yitzchak where you'll find this paradox? I don't know. Again, off the record, I wouldn't be surprised if you'll find it in non-Jewish sources. Mm. It could very well be. I don't know. I'm not saying that he got it from them.
It's very interesting.
But let me just finish the paragraph and then we'll stop. He says, "Be'ofer the tzir of zu shall avod v'yiras shade." He says, the only way of having your cake and eat it, meaning you could have the challenge of being an Oved, and at the same time you could be Oved mitok Yirash Hashem. The only way of, so to speak, reconciling this, but it's not a reconciliation, it's just formulating, is that the Yirei Chet has to have a tremendous desire, he calls it a Chuka Ava, Vatsuma, to be Mekayim the Chet, that the Chet should exist, which makes it possible for him to desire to be mevatel the chait, to destroy the chait. So let's read that paradox again. Well, how do we describe the essence of a yirei shamayim? It's a tremendous desire to maintain the existence of chait, because otherwise he can't be an oved, he can't have bechira chofshes. And yet, at the same time, his avoda and his desire, his greatest yearning, is to destroy chait. It's double vipucha. It's A and not A at the same time. We have a rule in mathematics that it's either A or not A. It can't be both A and not A at the same time. Here's a case where it could be both A and not A at the same time. From the little I studied of philosophy, this is what's called Hegelian dialectic. And that brings us back to the ancient Greek philosopher called Heraclitus. I don't know if any of this means to me. And basically, Heraclitus believed that anything that exists is a result of a tension between two opposite poles that are drawing and pulling in two opposite directions. And what we have here is a case of Hegelian dialectics. There's thesis and antithesis at the same time. The thesis is destroy chait. But the antithesis is I love chait, so to speak. Meaning I desire the existence of chait, because otherwise I've robbed for myself the status and the challenge of being an Oved. Omnam, he says, Kimisha toim stirizu. If a person tastes, he has a real, understanding and appreciation of this contradiction, this paradox, and he tastes akasha or pircha, he says, wait a minute, this can't be. That proves to me that he never really experienced avodas Hashem in what he calls, and this is typical in the Pachitza, Hilchus Deus and Chovas HaLevavos. Because this stira is really the essence of what the nefesh of a yirei chet is all about. A yirei chet lives with both of these truths simultaneously. The desire for the continued existence of chet so he can become an oved with koach habchira, and at the same time, as a bocher betov, the Yirei Shemayim wants to destroy chait. He wants the existence of chait, and he wants to destroy chait. And unless you've experienced this as an oved, you're going to have all sorts of questions, because from an abstract, conceptual, philosophical perspective, how can it be that you want dover vipucho? This is a pircha. You want the opposite of what you want. But in terms of the very experience of the of Avdus Hashem, this is exactly what we want. Go ahead. The question you want to ask.
I don't think I have I may not have a question, so I won't take the rest of it.
All right. So let's move on to number Vav over here. He says the following. We find in Chazal Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyir shamayim gemara and brachos that we mentioned earlier. And based on this experience, the way we described it, the phenomenology, if you will, of Yerushalmayim, we should explain to ourselves a very strange bakasha of David HaMelech. And this is a pasuk in Tehillim Yud Zayin. David opens up this pasuk by saying, "Bechanani Hashem v'nisani." Hashem tested me, that's called Bechina, v'nisani and nisayon. But Sarfa Kilyosai Vilibi. And as a result of all these challenges, David says, I achieved some sort of cathartic experience. Now, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Adaf Kuv Zayin that as a result of this statement of David HaMelech, he was punished. And how did Chazal know this? Because in the very next chapter, I made a mistake. It's not the next chapter, but in an earlier chapter of Tehillim, David HaMelech declares, "Zimosai bal yavar pi." Okay, the language here is a little bit challenging, but he spells it out for us. Halavai shelo haya davar ze yotze mi pi, meaning the fact that David HaMelech praises Hashem and thanks Hashem for testing him, which seems to indicate David's desire to be tested, that's something that David HaMelech should not have done. And he gets punished for it. But there's something amazing here, because David HaMelech did not take the first pasuk that we mentioned, which is in Tehillim Chafav, he didn't take it, omit it out of Tehillim. It's still part of Kisvei HaKodesh for all generations. So it doesn't mean that David HaMelech regretted his bakasha, his request to Hashem, praising Hashem and expressing his appreciation to Hashem for the bechinos and the nisyonos that he faces. That bakasha of David HaMelech, asking for more challenges, remains for all of eternity embedded in the Kisvei HaKodesh, the Holy Writ, Lidoros, and for all generations. We reiterate when we say Tehillim, this pasuk in Tehillim Chafav, in which we say to Hashem, grant us all these challenges. But yet David HaMelech paradoxically was punished for that. So do you hear what he's asking? Now, how can on the one hand David HaMelech ask Hashem for these bechidos and nisyonos, and that becomes part of our supplications throughout all of Jewish history, because we read Tehillim, right? That's what we do. And yet, paradoxically, David HaMelech himself says, I'm going to be punished for that very request. And the answer is that every day in davening, we say to Hashem, Al tivieni lidei nisayon. We ask Hashem, please, spare us of challenges. That's part of the Tachnunim of Knesset Yisrael. And yet at the same time, we recite this pasuk in Tehillim, in which we say, Hashem, please, I need all these challenges because that's going to purify my soul, my kidneys, and my heart. It's sarfa. Sarfa means a cathartic kind of cleansing process. So it's very paradoxical. On the one hand, challenges and confrontations with evil are negative. And we ask Hashem, Al tivieni lidei nisayon. On the other hand, we're saying to Hashem, you know what's going to build up my nefesh and purify it? It's the fact that you have challenged me and placed all these tribulations in front of me. And the answer is that this is the contradiction, the paradox that we live with. On the one hand, we're going to say, we're going to have these tachnunim, and on the other hand, we're going to have the other tachnunim. And what it really means is that on the one hand, we have an absolute obligation to face all the challenges. That is our bechira, that endows man with the great glory of man. What makes man unique? He's faced by these challenges. But on the other hand, We want to destroy these challenges and rip the, you know, rip out the rug from underneath these chetz, from these chatoim, such that they don't tempt us anymore. Ultimately, they decide.
Does this mean that David achieved that perfect state because he had the duality? Because he had both this and that?
Right, he was a genuine Yerushalayim. So on the one hand, you know, he expressed his supplication to Hashem for all these challenges that he faced. His life was one continuous chain of challenges. But on the other hand, you know what? Don't ask for challenges. Destroy those chatoim. Completely wipe off all those dangers and remove them. And the Pachad Yitzchak says we find this exact same paradox in the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Samach Aleph Amid Beis. The Gemara says that, I'm sorry, my mistake. The Gemara in Sota on Chav Beis Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says over there that a person who's higil ahora, meaning he has the ability to paskin shilas, he's obligated to do so. And yet, who could qualify to answer questions in halacha? It's only someone who has fear of hora. He's afraid to paskin. Very strange paradox. Because a person has to run away as far as he can and as fast as he can from hora because he's afraid of the responsibility of issuing a verdict and guiding people in a psak, but yet at the same time, he's got to run after psak. Because the Gemara says that if a person is higil ahora, he's obligated to be mora ahora. And he says that there was a famous case of a gadol, he doesn't tell us who the gadol is, but he refused to accept a position as a dayan because he says he's afraid to paskin. And then he came to his Rebbe, and he says, and his Rebbe said to him, so who should paskin? Someone who's not afraid to paskin? Dafkin's the one who's afraid to paskin. He's the one who's responsible and obligated to paskin. In other words, first we begin with a supplication to Hashem, al tevi'enu lidei nisayon. Nisayon challenges means an encounter with the reality of sin. That's disgusting. That's, you know, that's repulsive. Sin is repulsive, right? So we say to Hashem, I don't want any soyun. I don't want to have a pagisha, a face-to-face encounter with challenges. I don't walk the streets and see preachers in the streets. Save me that. Spare me that. But yet, what is the essence of the avoda, of the service to Hashem of a Yirei Shamayim, is the desire. I said the word and yet, I'll cross those words out. And in essence, the desire of the Oved Hashem B'Yira is the craving to completely undermine the reality of the existence of Chet. Al to the end of the Chet. I don't want to encounter Chet. The encounter with Chet is very disgusting. It's very despicable. But when he runs away from the reality of Chet, then Chet is no longer tempting him. And he's left in a situation where he's bereft, he's devoid of any koach habechira, of any choice, you know, crossroads of choice. And therefore, misoreres ba'atshuka, all of a sudden he becomes overwhelmed with a tremendous burning desire for the existence of chet. So in other words, he runs away from chet, and yet he runs towards chet. Al yedei dechiyaso, by rejecting chet, on the one hand, he runs away and he pushes away chet, but on the other hand, now he desires chet. The tests are now something good that's going to inspire him and uplift him. The deeper and the more profound his supplication to Hashem, don't give me nisayon because he hates chet, he doesn't want to encounter chet, can only come after he expresses his desire to Hashem, his supplication to Hashem, shel bechanani Hashem v'nisani. Please God, give me tests. Let me see chet, let me encounter chet. And a similar kind of paradox we find in the life of Rabbi Akiva. Because the Gemara tells us that at the time of his terrible torture, of his terrible death, Rabbi Akiva declared, while they were stroking his flesh with Masreiko Shabbat, so he says, Kol Yomai Hayisi Mitzapa Masa Yovoli De Liyodi Pasuk Seva Kaimenu. My whole life, every moment therein, I waited and I anticipated, I longed for the challenge of the great sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice. And we see something very strange. Rabbi Akiva, no doubt, on a daily basis, like every Jew, said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Tevi'eni Lidei Nisayon. Don't bring me a challenge. Run away from challenges. But yet, at the same time, Rabbi Akiva has a very deep desire on an ongoing, constant basis for Nisayon. Tzipia Mukol Akras Nisayon Nora. The worst Nisayon that you can imagine. So even at the moment that Rabbi Akiva is praying to Hashem, Al Tevi Leini Nisayon, his nefesh, his soul, is full of a desire and a craving to have the most difficult challenge of the world, to have his basar, his flesh, being flayed by Barzil. And this is what it's all about. This is the paradox. This is A and not A at the same time, the Hegelian dialectic. How do you prepare yourself for being a posek? Is by running away from Sak. How do you prepare yourself for that madrega of waiting for the challenge to come? Is because of your absolute overwhelming fear of the challenge itself. And this will perhaps shed a light on another very strange sugya. This is a Gemara in Erevin. On Daf Yud Gimel, the Gemara says they debated in the walls of the academies for 2 years whether it was better that man was created or better if man wasn't created. And the final conclusion was, Noach Eliyadim Shalom Nivra Mishanivra. Now, when we think about this statement, L'chor, it makes no sense. God completed creation, and every stage of creation says, Vayar L'kimis Esesh Osav Yini Tov. And then when he creates man on the sixth day, it says, V'yini Tov Ma'od. Man is great. And only with regard to the creation of man does the Torah add the word ma'od. So how could it be that Noach l'olam shalom nivra, that if man wasn't created? But the answer is that this is the paradox. Because what is bria of Adam? What is unique about the creation of man as opposed to all the other created beings? Man has freedom of choice. The animals do not have freedom of choice. And the Torah says, Vayitzer es Adam, there's a double yud. And the Gemara says man is a double creature. He's a hybrid. On the one hand, he's created from the Elyonim, from the higher worlds. On the other hand, he's created from the animal kingdom, the lower worlds. Man is a unique hybrid. Man has both good and evil within him. And the significance of the power of choice is the fact that over who dafkal derech hayachas hashlili.
So are we calling the Yetzer Hara the Beferet Hashi?
I guess. I mean, we Yetzer Hara, I don't know if you want to identify as Beferet Hashi, but
the Yetzer Hara. It sounds like you need that extra side to.
Correct. Without the Yetzer Hara, there's no Beferet Hashi. So how do we get to Bechira Chofshis? We pass through this negative experience in which we want to destroy evil. And yet at the end of the road, even after we destroy evil, we desire that the evil should be there. So the unique experience of Bechira, he calls it the Osher HaBechira, meaning the, you know, man, so to speak, is glorified by the fact that he has freedom of choice. That only reflects itself after man appreciates the tragedy that's inherent in freedom of choice. What's the tragedy? What's the ason? I just want to translate the word ason properly, not the disaster. That's the word I want to use. Ason, freedom of choice implies a disaster because it means that man is created with evil, with a desire for evil, and the desire for evil is something that tempts him at every stage. That's essentially what Bechira Chofsh is all about. Bechira Chofsh emerges dafka from the existence of the temptation for evil that's inherent within man as a created being. That, you know, one of the two yuds of Vayitzer. And that itself, the fact that man disastrously is given a temptation, is created as with an inherent soul that has a desire for evil and disaster, that itself makes man tov ma'od. Why is man tov ma'od? Because he's granted the koch ha-bechira. What makes man unique amongst the animals is that he has freedom of choice. But that freedom of choice implies that man essentially has an evil side to him and a temptation for evil. And that itself, paradoxically, makes man into tov ma'od. It's an unbelievable paradox in which the greatest evil of man's creation is his greatest greatness. You know, it's very paradoxical. On the one hand, we recognize the ason ha-bechira, the disaster inherent in bechira, and we have to realize how negative it is that man has this temptation within his soul for evil. And yet at the same time, that's the greatness of man. He's called tov ma'od. So what does it mean when we say Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra? I mean, insofar as man is tempted with evil, it would be better that he wasn't born, because evil is a very negative thing. But paradoxically, at the same time, man's creation is a being that's tov ma'od. Why? Because man is the only being on this earth that was created by God that is endowed with freedom of choice. So the freedom of choice is the greatest endowment of man. That makes him tov ma'od amongst all the other, in contrast to all the other brias. But yet that tov ma'od is a result of the fact that man has this negative element within him, this ason ha-bechira, as he calls it, the fact that man is tempted to do evil. And the confrontation with evil is the most repulsive experience that draws man down, down, down into the mud.
Hence Noah's law. Not that it's objectively better, but it's more comfortable one.
Right. And you won't find the words tov ma'od for anything else that God created, because everything else that God created has no bechira chafshis. And you'll never find about any creature that God created noach lo shelo nivra. You won't find that, you know, say something about a lamb or even an elephant or a serpent or a lion. You won't find, you know, noach lo shelo nivra. Why? Because the noach lo shelo nivra is uniquely designated for something that's tov ma'od. Meaning, the Bechira Chafshis has two sides to it. On the one side, it's noach lo shelo nivra, because look how negative it is that man is faced with the challenge and temptation to do evil. Man can become a murderer. But on the other side, that's the greatness endowment of man. Why is he tov ma'od? Dafka because noach lo shelo nivra. Because he has this negative temptation for evil. That's the paradox of man. This is pretty mind-boggling. And all this takes us back to Rosh Hashanah, which was the topic of our discussion. Because Rosh Hashanah is called Zikaron Liyom Rishon in the Gemara on Daf Chav Zayin. Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. This is the day of the creation, not of the world, but of man. Okay.
Yom Rishon really means Yom Shishi.
Correct. Okay. Absolutely. And that's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Chav Zayin. So man is created on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore Rosh Hashanah is called Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha, which means that the statement, the declaration of God, Nase Adam, was on Rosh Hashanah itself. And the sanctity of Rosh Hashanah is the sanctity of creating man. And therefore, on this day of Rosh Hashanah, which represents the day of the creation of man, there are two flames that are lit. Now, two torches, so to speak, that are lit, both of which relate to the creation of man. On the one hand, there's the torch or the banner that says, Noach lo liyadam shelo nivra, that man is created with this negativism, with this terrible kind of repulsive encounter with evil. And that reflects itself in the shofar, because the shofar is the sound of ginuche gonich v'ilule yolil. That's the sound of the trua, which is like the sound of someone who is injured or a baby that's crying, these whimpering sounds. Why the crying? Why is the shofar crying? The answer is the shofar is crying because man tragically faces the temptation of evil, which is disastrous to man. But yet, on the very same day of the creation of man, another torch is lit. And that torch is the torch of Tov Ma'od, that man is granted the greatest attribute of anything in creation. He's the crowning glory, crowning glory of creation. He's granted freedom of choice. And both of these torches burn together, one on top of the other. That's what Nehemiah is telling us. Al Tivku. Don't cry on Rosh Hashanah. Don't cry about the fact that man was created with that inherent temptation for evil. Noach lo li'adam shelo nivra. Yes, there is room to cry on Rosh Hashanah about the creation of man. Noach lo li'adam shelo nivra. In some sense, it would be better for man not to have to face evil. But at the same time, ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'ozchem. There is a potential for bechia. Crying on Rosh Hashanah is not something alien or foreign that has to be rejected, because the nature of the simcha, the creation of man on this day, is very complex. It's very paradoxical. It's dialectical. Man as a created being on the one hand is Noach Olam Shalom Nivra. And that's the shofar of Ginuchei Ganach Yulili Yolil. There is place for Bechiah. It's not foreign. But on the other hand, Chevzas Hashem Imoschem realize that God created man with this temptation and this possible disaster to fall into the terrible pits of evil. But that is goof of the greatness of man. The source of man's endowment for freedom of choice is this repulsive negative side of man. And therefore, lifnei abechia, ein dai dmos levate al yodem es oson b'riyas adam noach lo adam shalom nivra. He says that when you're at the verge of crying, of breaking out in tears on Rosh Hashanah, because you realize how low you can get, how man, even the greatest, the Gemara says that even tzaddikim gemurim is einlem, they shouldn't be sure about themselves. Al tam v'atzmacha. You have no reliance that you won't be tempted. And Yitzhak Shalom is Kabbalah B'chol Yom Tom Vakish Lad Miso. It's a terrible battle. And there's room to cry. Noach Lodom Shalom Niver. What do I need this terrible confrontation? Why do I need, as Rabbi Akiva says it, this Nisayon Nora of torture? But as I stand and experience Bechiah, and now this Bechiah is behind me, then I realize that in truth, ein al malivkos, we should not be crying for that disastrous potential within man. Says Nehemiah, al tivku v'al te'otzvu, ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'ozchem, v'yar alokim es kol asher osa, v'hine tov ma'od. What is great about man? Why is man the crowning glory of creation, the tov ma'od? Chelo milfano, chilu milfano kol haaretz, Aftikon Tevo Baltimot. The entire world shakes in front of man. Why? Because man is this contradiction. Man on the one is Ra'ada, is fear, but yet he will not collapse. Man is granted freedom of choice. He can encounter evil with a disgusting encounter, but yet he has the ability to defeat his foe. If he has the true Yirah Shamayim, to utilize his Bechira Chavshis and completely neutralize Chet and undermine its very existence. But at the same time, to desire the crowning glory of Bechira Chavshis. Zehu inyano shel pnimiyas olamos biyantim shel Rosh Hashanah. What is the deeper meaning of this Yantif of Rosh Hashanah? It's the Eitaniyut, these powerful standing of Chil and Ra'ada, of the fact that I fear and I shake, I tremble on Rosh Hashanah, I realize the temptations are so awesome, and yet at the same time, Chedvas Hashem Hi Mozchem. And now we can come back to the beginning of what we started with, and that is Ashrei ha'am yodei trua. And we said that Chazal say in the Medrash, what does it mean? Ashrei ha'am yodei trua. Yodim lefatos is boram betrua. Somehow through the blowing of the shofar, the Jewish people know how to seduce Kaviyochol through this shofar blowing. What does it mean? What is a pitui? He mentions the Ramban and Mishpatim. Pitui is when you say something but you have something else in mind. Right? Like you tell this woman how beautiful she is, but really you have something else in mind. We won't go into detail on Mevin Yavin. He says that's what shofar is. Shofar, on the one hand, says one thing, but on the other hand, it means something different. Why? He says, with regard to all the other mitzvahs, with the exception of shofar, everything is straight. There are no complexities. The mitzvah brings its objective and its conclusion. But shofar is different. Because on the one hand, shofar is matzmiach tov ma'od. It does declare the tov ma'od, the greatness of man. But how so? It's only al yidei ha-genicha v'yalila, only through the crying of the fact that man encounters evil and evil tempts man. Man is a complex being.
I didn't understand that part. Yeah. How did the blowing of the shofar, how does it not show its end?
No, because when you look at the shofar, what you hear is the sound of Tov Ma'od. The shofar is declaring that the sanctity of the day of Rosh Hashanah is the day of Tchilas Masech, the day of the creation of man. Man is Tov Ma'od. The first time and the only time that God declares His creation is Tov Ma'od, He gives Himself the Ma'od, grade, is only when He creates man. Man is the incredible being, the only being, the singular being that's endowed with freedom of choice. That's the greatest of man. And the shofar represents that.
Okay.
But the intention of the shofar, really, deeper, is the ginuchei ganich and the yilulei loyalil. How does man become this great tov ma'od being? What process does the creation of man entail, step by step, until finally he reaches the tov ma'od? It's got to be through the noach ol yadam shlo nivra. The fact that man is partially created from the tachtonim, he has desires, and he has as we said before, a constant confrontation with evil and the possibility of disaster. The fact that man is like in the mashal that we gave, he's on a road, a dark road, and wherever he turns, there are pitfalls, there are dangers.
So it's fitting. The shofar has a duality in its own. No?
Correct.
So it's like the wailing of a
child. That's the genuche yoyl of the trua. At the same time, there's the tekiya sound of, wow, we are great. We're victorious. Mm. We won. He says that's what's unique about shofar. Vayidei ze, by blowing the shofar, yodim lefatos is born betrua. And mahalchem heim bi'or ponav. We said that even though every mitzvah and all the Torah in general has ha'oras ponim, there's a special ha'oras ponim that's inherent in the shofar. And even though all the great gifts of all the mitzvahs that Hashem bestowed upon us in the Torah all have ha'oras ponim, ki bi'or ponecha nasat alonu toras chayim, but nevertheless the ha'oras ponim of universal mitzvahs, of Klal Yisdika mitzvahs, that relates to one aspect of the Bria, one dimension of the Bria, namely, Vayar Lakim, as Kol Asher Asav, Hinei Tov Ma'od. Ma'od is a reference to Adam, it's the same three letters. And that Ha'aris Panim relates to the Bria itself. Man's relationship to the Bria, if you make a comparison and a contrast, is Tov Ma'od. And that's the hardest part of every mitzvah. Every mitzvah indicates that man is tov ma'od. That's a simplistic approach. However, when we talk about the specific hardest part of the unique nature of winning over Hashem with this mitzvah of shofar, this specific mitzvah, how do we win over Hashem and Hashem is so happy, is when we declare that this tov ma'od is the end of a process. The process begins with Ginuchei Ganich and Yilulei Yolil, with the fact that we are tempted to evil. We recognize and we say to Hashem through the shofar, you know what, I'm crying on this day because I realize what dangers lurk in the shadows wherever I turn. And every second of my day, and whenever I take one little baby step, I'm faced with a tremendous challenge, a confrontation with evil. But then we blow the shofar and we say to Hashem, despite the Yalul Yolil and the Ginuche Gonech, despite the fact that Noach Liadam Shalom Nivra, why create man as such an evil, you know, with such an evil propensity or desire? The answer is no. It's Tov Mod. We're still going to blow the shofar. We're going to say to Hashem, we know the secret of the shofar. We understand the secret of the creation of man. On this day of creation, we recognize the fact that man's greatness has to come through this paradox, this negative element of his confrontation with the existence of evil. Man has to desire evil and then utilize his koach habechira. And we say to Hashem, we are dedicated to, you know, we appreciate this complexity in man, this paradox in man. We will reveal the Tov Ma'od even in the Yalulei Yalil. Even within the Trua, we reveal the Tkia and the declaration of the glory of man, his Tov Ma'od. He's the crowning glory of creation. He is the endowment of Bechira Chofshis. That's the Yodei Trua. That means we're not just listening to the Trua, but we discern below the surface the deeper meaning of the Trua. That's the secret of the Trua. That's the Yodei Trua. And therefore, by making that declaration to Hashem, that we acknowledge, we recognize the complexity, the paradox within man, Hashem bi'or panechi aleichun, we get and we gain, we achieve that special horus ponim of the shofar, by acknowledging and recognizing the deeper meaning in the shofar, the pitui of the shofar, which means, on the one hand, superficially we're saying one thing, but we really mean something on a deeper level that's much more complicated. We embrace the complexity, we face the challenge. We're going to be like all the greats of all the generations who, on the one hand, like David HaMelech, will ask Hashem for nisyonos. On the other hand, they will say, Al tevi'enu lidei nisyon. We will desire to uproot evil and destroy it. But at the same time, we appreciate and we desire that evil so that we can utilize and implement our Bechir Chofshis and achieve greatness. I think that this Maimar is very fundamental, can radically change our understanding of ourselves as Ovdei Hashem Mitoch Yira, and it really sheds a whole new light on Rosh Hashanah, the Kedusha Yom, and on the mitzvah of Shofar. Very powerful. It's really quite an achievement.
It kind of makes you feel less bad about having so many like yetzers.
Correct.
It's like, oh, it's a good thing. It's like,
correct. On the one hand, it's a bad thing, but on the other hand, it's only because of that bad thing that man is such a great creature. He's such a great entity. He's a tovmo. See, Ratzon, we should be zocher to appreciate everything that we have. The two yuds of Vayitzer, of the two worlds that we were created from, the Eliyodim and the Tachtonim. And if we appreciate that, we'll be the Yodei Trua, and in Mirtz Hashem, we'll be successful in that great challenge to utilize the greatest gift that man was endowed with, the Koach HaBechira, in the right way.
Have a good